Hey, this is Amanda. Welcome to Decoding Blackness. I'm your host. Decoding Blackness is a space for Black women to have conversations about how we define what it means to be Black and a woman. We embody divineness, occupy all the spaces, and are living audaciously. But through all of that, it takes self-care and inner work to keep being the divine woman that we are. So not only will we conversate on topics important to us and foster connection and community, each episode will have elements of self-care and wellness, such as affirmations, meditations, and wellness tips. I'm so thankful you're here. Let's hold space together and get started on decoding our Blackness. Hey everyone, welcome to Decoding Blackness. This is Amanda, your host. In this episode, we will be talking to Bella Jones of Bella's Credit Corner. Bella is an entrepreneur and has several platforms, which we'll go over today, and she helps people increase their financial knowledge. Welcome, Bella. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited about having today's conversation. It's going to be a good one.
Me too. I'm excited. I'm so excited. I love myself personally learning more about finances. And then, of course, our audience as well. So just tell us a bit more about who you are and what you do.
Sure thing. So my name is Bella Jones, and I am the CEO and owner of Bella's Credit Corner. So I am a financial strategy coach. My mission is ultimately to help my audience think differently when it comes to their credit, their finances, and how they manage their money. Because at the end of the day, it's all about financial literacy and building wealth. This is something that we're not really taught in school. We're taught how to make money, but not what to actually do with it ultimately, right? So that's basically my mission. I also want to just help us break out of that generational curse of just not building wealth. I also focus on just limiting beliefs just keep us back, right? So I want us to change our mindsets also so that way we can take those steps to move forward financially, build wealth, have good credit, and change the narrative within our community. We just have this narrative where we just settle for bad credit, we settle for living paycheck to paycheck, which we don't have to if we change our mindset and ultimately put in the work.
That's awesome. And we'll get into that, like that generational aspect of like financial knowledge, financial literacy. Many people call it different things, of course. But who do you work with primarily? So, what's your clientele exists of?
Yeah. So my primary audience and clientele base are women of color who are Xers, millennials, their moms, their wives, their entrepreneurs, their professionals. And they are just at a point in their life where they just want to start doing things differently. They may have made mistakes in their early 20s and mid 20s, and now they just are trying to break out of that cycle. So they want to have good credit. They want to purchase a home. They want to start a business. So they turn to me and my platform to kind of help them get started in their journey.
Gotcha. So here's the thing about your platforms. Like you have your YouTube, of course, you have your podcast, which we'll get into, of course, your Facebook and your Instagram. But the great thing that you do is you're so vulnerable. You're so vulnerable and you talk about your own experiences, like with financial knowledge and with money. So can you tell us a bit about your growth and your experience, which led you to what you do now?
Sure. So my backstory is back in 2014, I was separated from my first husband and I was trying to purchase a first home on my own. And so my scores weren't that great. They were about the 620 to 650 range, like just enough to get approved for a mortgage, but I had really good income. So I started shopping around for a home and I got pre-approved. It was great. I was telling everyone, hey, I'm getting ready to buy a house. And lo and behold, it's time I picked the house. I put thousands of dollars on contract to take the house off the market so I could purchase it. Mm-hmm. And then going through the process, all of a sudden my loan officer calls me and says, we have a problem. My credit score is tanked to like 498 to about 520 because I had a bunch of student loans like we all have. Well, most of us have, right? and reporting 90 days late, and I didn't consolidate. So I had like 13 or 15 different loans that hit 90 days late. So my score dropped well over 100 plus points. The deal ultimately just fell through because Nelnet, the loans weren't deferment. So it was definitely an issue on their end, but they weren't budging. We tried many things. The deal ultimately fell through. And for me, that was my rock bottom. I realized that I really had to get my scores to a point where nothing could stop me, right? I had to really be on top of my credit because I had no idea what was going on behind the scenes until someone else ran my credit. And that really, we should be more proactive when it comes to our credit. Whether you are looking to apply for anything or not, you should be mindful about what's going on your credit report. And I wasn't doing that. And so I realized I had to do better with my credit, how I was managing my money. It was just, I was not in a good place. Again, I was separated from my first husband. So I had my own financial hardships because of that. But I also wasn't good at managing money either, just to be honest, transparent. So that's when I started my journey. 2014, I said, we are going to try this again. I don't care how long it's going to take, because it might take a while, but I want to have amazing credit. I want to buy a house and just kind of do better for myself and ultimately for my children. So fast forward 2.5 years later, now during this journey, I divorced from my first husband, met my current husband. So we were trying to do this journey together, but he already had good credit, but I still was working on mine. So after 2.5 years of budgeting, saving, tears, stress, everything in between, when it comes to dealing with financial issues, we were able to buy a house at less than 4% interest. My scores were well into the 700s and we became homeowners. And I knew how empowered I felt and how accomplished I felt because I worked hard for that, right? No one helped me. No one gave me anything. I busted my tail to do this. And I knew that after that experience, there had to be other people who needed that kind of help, who were dealing with the same things that I would dealt with. So that's kind of where the idea of Bella's Credit Corner kind of came to life. But I didn't do anything with it for like 2 years, truth be told.
Okay.
You all have great ideas, right? And then you kind of just sit on it. You don't know what to start. Is it stupid or not, right? So then that's when my YouTube channel started. That's really how I started this whole company, really. And then from there, it went from YouTube to people DMing me about questions about their credit and what they could do. Could I help them? And then that's when I kind of got into credit repair. And then so I started helping other women to fix their credit, you know, disputing things, late payments and collection accounts, and just trying to get things off their credit report so they could have better credit scores ultimately. And then after about 2 years of doing that, I've officially transitioned to financial literacy, because credit's really just a small part or small portion of your
credit,
right? It's the mindset. Because if you, for example, if I have a client who has poor credit, they got there somehow, right? But until they ultimately address their habits and their mindset, I can get your scores into the 800s, but if we don't fix what you're doing, you'll be back in the same place in a few years.
Straight facts. Yep. Straight facts.
Right. So that's why for 2020, I've kind of transitioned out of just focusing on credit to just overall financial literacy, because I want to empower other women and ultimately my community to do better. Right. When it comes to credit, selling for bad credit shouldn't be a thing. Right. Living paycheck to paycheck should not be a thing. Not investing in building wealth should not be a thing. It should be the norm for us, right? Having good credit should be the norm. Building wealth should be the norm. And that's ultimately my goal now. So by sharing my story and being transparent, which is a bit scary because I have friends who didn't really know what was going on at the time, now they know my business.
That vulnerability right there. Yeah.
Absolutely. But for me, it's bigger than that. It's bigger than me, right? If I can get one person out there to start thinking about their credit and thinking about saving and investing, I don't care what others may think of me. My goal is to serve people at this point, to get them to do better and think better.
Oh, I love it.
That's my ultimate goal. So yeah, that's just my backstory.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Because, you know, I honestly, while you're talking, what I'm thinking about is my history with credit. When I first got my first credit card, it was like many people in college, and in like the hallways in my college, you had all these signs about credit card and interest. I'm like, ooh, credit card. I think I need that, you know? And the very, and like, you don't know, like, I didn't learn any of this stuff in high school. And, you know, when it came to my family, and we'll go into this about our family experience with money, it wasn't, what's the word I want to use? Like, I don't think it was something that we were fully aware of, right? Like, in my family, wasn't really taught. In many ways, we, you know, we lived in New York. New York is expensive as I don't know what. So, you know, my knowledge when it came to money wasn't there. So in college, the very first credit card I got was, I think, from Express, a clothing store. Right. And it was only like $500, but I was so happy. I was like, oh my God, it's $500. I didn't work at the time. I had no job. I didn't think about it, you know, and that like started my, you know, beginning journey with credit. And then once that like defaulted, I was like, oh shoot, you got to pay this thing back. It just really goes into that lack of knowledge we get from when you're in school, where you need to learn these things, of course, these life skills. And then when it comes to our families, like, how were we taught, you know? So you definitely dropped a lot of, I think, relatable information there when it comes to, you know, our financial knowledge and how it can start and the importance of it. Oh my God. Cause when you're young, you have no idea how important it is to have a good credit score.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing is, I find that most people don't care about their credit until they need it.
Yes.
And that's the worst position to be in. I always tell my audience and my clients, if you don't need to apply for credit right now, but you know you have credit challenges, now is the perfect time to start working on it, because you're going to need it at some point, whether to finance a car, purchase a home, get a job, for example. And that's not when you want to be scrambling to say, hey, I have bad credit, or hey, what are my credit scores? You want to be prepared and put yourself in a position to succeed and to be approved ultimately. But that's the unfortunate thing. People don't care about credit until they need it. And by that point, it's usually too late, right?
So. Yeah. Or it's like they don't care, or it's just a lack of awareness, a lack of knowledge. I think all of those things can play a huge factor. And you said something important too, like when it comes to employment, you know, like some of these employers are looking at your credit score and want to see how you manage money, because that leads into other things like, how reliable are you? How trustworthy are you? How much can they, you know, really, you know, invest in you? Right. But it really, it's so deep. It's so deep. And sometimes we aren't fully aware of that. So what kind of challenges then do your clients come to you with?
So they usually, you know, have very low credit scores, but they're at a point in their life where they want to purchase a home. They want to be able to purchase a vehicle, but at really good interest rates. So they turn to me to kind of help them, you know, get their credit in order. So what we will do is have a consultation, because I don't want to, you know, sell anyone a dream. I'm very transparent. I tell you what I can and cannot do. I'm not here to sell you a dream that, oh, I'll get your score up by 200 points in 30 days. I don't do that.
Yeah.
So a consultation to kind of just see where you are in your journey and if I can, in fact, help you. Because I can't help every single person, because everyone's situation is a little different. But I only want clients that I know I can realistically help them, or if they even need my services. I had one client in particular who, she only had like one late payment on her account, on her credit report. Everything else is pretty much solid, but she gave her scores time to kind of improve. So I worked with her for like 30 days, 60 days, and that was really about it. So we kind of have a consultation. We'll see where you are, what your expectations are, and how I can help you. If you're trying to buy a house in 30 days and you have 500 credit scores, I can't help you, right?
Yeah.
Your goal is to buy a house a year from now, 2 years from now, and you're willing to put in the work, then we can work together. Because I, even though I am doing the work for you, it is a partnership, right?
Yes.
You have to do your part and I must do my part. And we must always be in communication, whether it's, you know, I can't have you going out and applying for 5 credit cards and I'm working on your credit.
Yes.
Right? We can't.
Yeah. And that further perpetuates that, like, you know, the idea that I want to, you know, have a good credit score, but I don't want to work toward it, right? You're working with someone to improve, but you're going out there and doing those same old habits that got you to where you are now. So it has to be a partnership.
Exactly.
They have to have a level of understanding. Absolutely.
Right. So that's why we have the consultations, to kind of set the expectations of what I do for you and what I can do for you, but also what I expect of you as a client. And if you are not willing to do certain things, then obviously it's not going to be a good partnership. And I don't want to set you or myself up for failure. So that's why the consultations are really important. So once, you know, once we do decide to work together, because it has to be a mutual, right, reciprocal relationship, then sure. You go ahead and move forward. So then I look at your credit report. I tell you, you know, whether you need to apply for a secured credit card, because some people, they don't have really bad habits. They have a thin profile. They only have like one or two accounts there, right? So that also will drag your scores down. So my ultimate goal is to educate you on how we're going to get your scores up and what I'm going to do for you. So whether it's removing collection accounts, removing late payments, disputing things, etc. And then so we work together for as long as I need to work with you. Like some credit repair agencies, they just look at you as a dollar sign. For me, I don't keep you on board any longer than I ultimately have to. So if I know I've done everything for you, gotten to a point, it's a year later, it's 6 months later, now you might just need time. We'll have that conversation. So that way I'm not charging you every single month, right, for my services.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, and it reminds me, honestly, the way you're talking, like for me as a counselor, like the therapeutic relationship. And like with my clients, like mental health wise, like, you know, I'll help you, I'll support you, coping skills, all those wonderful things. However, there is more out there that you need, meaning resources and, you know, the aftercare. You know what I mean? So even as you're helping them through this, what's the aftercare that you're providing them to make sure that they're using the tools, using the skills that you're teaching them so that they don't go down this road again, right? So from clinical perspective, I'm looking at it as that. So what do you do then after you do all this work, after they do all this work to help so that they, you know, after that relationship is kind of finished and you guys are good, what do you do after? What do you teach them that they can carry with them after?
Well, that's why I started doing the financial literacy. So I've had a few money mastermind courses over the summer where that's like the next step in the journey, or actually can kind of run parallel. And in that class, we talked about, you know, the importance of having a budget, right? Because your budget is basically the roadmap to help you achieve your financial goals. So if you're going to go from having bad credit to good credit, your budget's there to help you stay on track, pay your bills on time, keeping your credit card balances low. So talk about budgeting, talk about the importance of saving, because that's the other part. When most of us run into financial hardship, it's because we just maybe have a point in time where things come up and we just can't afford certain things and we have no savings to fall back on. Whether it's you lose a job, whether you fall sick, whether you go through a divorce, right? And then now your finances are all out of whack and you have no backup to kind of help you through those tough times, as we see now with COVID. So that saving is so important. But also saving is not the ultimate end goal. Saving is there for as a cushion to protect you from those emergencies. But investing and building wealth is where the money is, right? That's where you're going to take your $1,000 portfolio and make it a $10,000 portfolio over time. And that's really how you start building wealth. So in that course, those are the things we kind of focus on. And that's really the aftercare. Also, I have lots of free content on my YouTube channel, my podcast, my Instagram to help you, to help others, you know, think about their finances differently so they can keep themselves on that straight path of having credit and having their finances in order. So that's really what I provide, which is why I've kind of shifted from the credit to financial literacy, because that's really the holistic picture that I focus on. Because people may have good credit, so they don't need my services when it comes to that. But they're not investing actively. They're not building wealth. They're living paycheck to paycheck. And so now I want to serve others to kind of get that part of their finances in order.
Absolutely. And that brings to mind like generational trauma, not generational trauma, but generational knowledge about finances, right? Because you're talking about teaching them how to invest, how to save, how to do all these things that can help them for the next, you know, generation, for their children and their children's children. So we know there's so much history, you know, in our community regarding, you know, financial misinformation and limited access and just limited accessibility in general. How do you think that generational thing can impact future generations if we don't stop that pattern?
well, we're going to continue to struggle financially. We're going to continue to be behind. Instead of putting our children in a position where they have a better start off point, they're going to be back at square zero. Unlike our counterparts, they focus on putting their children in a position to succeed. So they don't have to start from square, you know, ground zero, if you
yes.
will.
Yes.
So that's how the generational thing is so important. But then that also goes back to the mindset and things like that. We've seen stories, right, where a family will build a legacy, then the children inherit it, and then they just throw it all away. They
miss yes.
the money. They don't do well with the money. And then so now they have lost what their family or ancestors have built. And then their children now have to start from square zero. So that's why the mindset is really important, because I've mentioned in my podcast and other things that I, my other platforms is, you know, it's all about the mindset. It doesn't matter how much money you make. That's important. Mm-hmm. How much money you get to keep and what you do with it. Like in my own financial journey, when I made $12, $15 an hour and I was bad with money, once I made $60, $70, $80, $90,000 a year and was still bad with money, it didn't matter. It didn't matter how much more money, I was still bad with it. I kept making bad financial decisions. I kept mismanaging my money. So if you don't know how to manage $1,000, how are you going to manage $1 million? This kind of goes true. Back to those millionaires, right? The lottery winners who go broke in five
years,
right? They come into millions and millions of dollars. And within a couple of years, they have nothing. We see celebrities who have made hundreds of millions in their career and then end up with nothing when it's all said and done. So that's why the mindset is so important, to pass on the knowledge to our children so they can do better and they can take what we've grown and built and make it that much better. You know, the mindset, the priorities, right? We don't want you to focus on having the newest pair of Jordans. We want you to focus on investing and buying stuff, buying stocks and bonds and looking in real estate down the road.
Yeah. And you know what? It also brings to mind, like we talk about the lottery winners, or when a family does have money and then, you know, their children kind of just squander it. It brings to mind that Keeping Up with the Joneses kind of thing, right? Where you do have a little bit of money, or you are making some extra, and you're not saving or investing, but you're, you know, buying this and buying that, trying to keep up with the Joneses. But in some respects, it has a lot to do with the fact that, you know what, I never had anything, or now I have this little bit of money, I want to do what I want to do with it, which is
right.
in some ways, of course, understandable. But that's that other, I think, the personal, emotional, mental health kind of aspect to it, where that needs to be addressed, right? Where it's, what's the mental block?
Right.
What's the emotional block? What are you really trying to fill with that extra money that you have now? Or even if you don't, because there are people who, of course, don't have a lot of money, but may spend a lot of money on something that they really, truly can't afford.
Yeah.
But there's a certain satisfaction or feeling that comes from buying that, because it makes you feel like, okay, I am a little bit of a step up, or I can appear to be that way.
Right.
You know, so I think you said, use a term earlier, holistic. It definitely takes, I think, a holistic approach when it comes to financial knowledge, financial literacy, because many of us are so misinformed. And, you know, and we know in many ways that it's systemic. It absolutely is systemic. And it's just, essentially been put on us in many ways to be financially misinformed and to not have access to information. One of my other episodes where I talked to Chi-Chi Coleman about finances and trading, we talked about Tulsa. We talked about how in the past, you know, we had Black Wall Street and all these communities and people who were doing amazing things. But then, you know, racism, discrimination, all those things, hate came into play and stopped that. And I think that leads to a certain level of perhaps resistance or concern when it comes to doing that again. But our amazing people, what we do is we keep going, because
right.
we see so many people who are still building, buying like land and all these things and really building up their communities. And I think that's what it takes, like absolutely like a holistic approach and a community approach to once again be financially aware and informed. So super critical, super critical.
Agreed. And also, financial illiteracy is very profitable for these businesses, right?
Oh, so yeah.
Gets you to, if you have bad credit I can get you to finance a vehicle at 20% interest. Mm-hmm. But someone with good credit who may only get charged 3% interest, as a business, mm-hmm. who would I want to cater to more? 3% rate of return on my money or the 20% rate of return on my money? So, you know, that's why by keeping us ignorant or keeping us focused on the wrong things, these businesses are making money hand over fist, right? So by keeping us uneducated, by keeping us with the smoke and mirrors that, hey, I can get you this, you know, car, and it's only $20,000 and hey, you don't have bad credit, but I can get you into this car. Don't worry about it. 6 years, 20%. Mm-hmm. And they tell it to you like they're doing you a favor when in fact they're not.
Not at all.
For financial failure. They're putting you in a vehicle that you are, one, going to overpay on. Mm-hmm. Two, you're going to have monthly payments that you more than likely cannot afford. And then at the end of the day, they don't care about whether you keep it in the long run. They just want those monthly payments. And if you can't pay it, we'll just repossess the vehicle. Yeah. And so we can continue to perpetuate that. It is very profitable for them to continue to push these narratives, right? We have this buy here, pay here, right? You see a lot in the South and things like that. It's not because they care about whether you're getting a car. They care about securing a consistent revenue stream that's very profitable, very high margin. And so by us doing better in regards to our credit, that empowers us to have just better negotiating power, right? If you have good credit and a bank knows you have good credit, they're going to work with you to get you a lower price, concessions on fees and things like that. Versus if you have bad credit, you have to settle for whatever they're going to offer you. Take it or leave it, because we know you're going to have a very hard time finding anything anywhere else. So when you are empowered to do better, right, it helps you financially in the long run. You know, paying thousands of dollars of extra in interest is pointless when you can just work on your credit and get your scores up and to kind of save yourself the money. But the problem that I find is we live in this microwave generation. No one wants to put in the work. We want things now, or we want things as of yesterday.
Yes.
And we want the quick fix. So instead of saying, let me save, work on things for a year or two, I'd rather buy it now and overpay regardless of how much I'm struggling financially to keep it and to pay for it.
And I think sometimes when you say that, like sometimes people aren't really fully aware that that's what's happening, right? Like they just want that, like you said, that instant gratification right now. And it also brought to mind for me when you talked about when you go to like a car dealership or something like that and, you know, get in a car for $20,000 or whatever the case might be and having a high interest rate. I would never forget my brother, his other thing, they look at you in a certain way, right? Like those banks, those car dealership, when you're black or brown, you walk in there, they're already looking at you in a certain light. Mm-hmm. So I would never forget my brother. He went to buy a car. This was years ago. And, you know, he just wanted to get whatever, you know, the factory brand, you know, the factory model or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he told me how the car dealership person, car salesperson was like, oh, well, this car has rims and this one had like all these things. And he's just like, what? And it was such a microaggression kind of thing, but really blatant when I know you're interested in a bling. I know you're interested in this and that, you know, and thank goodness he was aware enough to kind of go, no, that's not what I'm here for. But what? It brings to mind how they are looking at you when you are of color and how you need to walk in there with that mindset. My husband and I, when we went to get a car some time ago, we already had our bank. We've been banking with the same organization forever. Mm-hmm. So we already were approved for our car loan. We were good. We were straight. Really good interest rate. So the car salesman, of course, see us, a black couple, young, thinking that our credit wasn't anything, not knowing how our credit was. We were good. Right. We had a check in hand, you know, and we used that as leverage because he really was trying to, oh my, it was like ridiculous when you have that knowledge, I guess is what I'm trying to say. When you have that knowledge, and you approach these businesses and organizations that you're trying to buy something from with that leverage, they can't get over on you.
Yes.
They cannot. So it's so critical, like you said, to just be fully aware and have that wherewithal when it comes to these spaces. Absolutely.
Yes, totally agree. And yeah. That's why I show up on my platform every day to kind of help and encourage others to do that. Because when you have good credit, you just move and walk and feel different.
You do.
Right? Yeah. You don't have the power to say, oh, are they going to maybe approve me? You know you're going to be approved, and you know you're going to haggle and negotiate because you have, like you said, the leverage to do so. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when you are a person of color, you have to set the tone of the conversation because they they do have their stereotypes in mind. And so when you walk into any bank or business, you set the tone at the beginning. For me, when I work with anyone, whether it's in corporate America or even just in my own business, it's going to be a respectful, right? Situation. It is going to be, you're not going to talk to me in a condescending manner. I'm educated. I know what I'm talking about. And we are going to be as such. And if it's not going to be that way, I will take my business elsewhere. So that's
exactly,
regardless of how your credit may be or not be, how much money you make or don't make, you have to set the tone when you're dealing with these companies. You set the tone of how they're going to treat you. And if they can't move or act accordingly, you just move on to something else and move on to somewhere else.
Yeah. I like that you said that no matter how much money you have or what your credit score is, still walk in there and, you know, be aware, be knowledgeable, and don't let them walk all over you. You know, that's super critical. But it is a thing that we address and we have to kind of go through as we kind of, you know, buy homes and get loans or cars or whatever the case might be. So really, really super important. So I do want to talk about your platforms. I want to talk about your podcast. So you just started it. It's called How to Stop Being Broke. And I was listening to a couple of episodes and you talked about the title, Broke. Yeah. You talked about broke and it being a mindset. Can you explain that for us?
Sure thing. So when it comes to being broke, for me, as someone who works in finance and who helps people with their credit and finances, being broke has nothing to do with how much you make. It all has to do with your mindset. So as we talked about before, you know, you can make a lot of money and still have messed up credit and finances, right? So you can make, let's say, $100,000 a year, but if your bills are $120,000 for the year, you're in debt. Right. You're mismanaging your money more than likely versus someone who's making half of that, who is spending their money wisely. They're actively investing, they're actively saving, and their mindset and priorities are much different than the person who's broke at $100,000. So again, it's not about how much money you make, it's about how much money you keep and how you use the money that you ultimately do get to keep. And the mindset is really where it all starts. So that's why I, you know, created my free training, which is also called How to Stop Being Broke in 2020, because if you change your mindset, everything else that I'm trying to teach you won't stick. It won't resonate because you're not quite there yet, right? You have to kind of get the mindset where you're focused on the right things. You're ready to make that long-term commitment to your finances. And until you kind of get that squared away, nothing else is really going to resonate. It's not going to stick and it's not going to help you. You're going to continue to struggle financially. And so that's ultimately why I named it that, because it kind of, one, it kind of hits home. When you read it, you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, and but two, also, that's really what it's about. It's about the broke mindset. It's not about the money you make and what you have and don't have.
So when, honestly, like you're saying, broke mindset, and what's resonating with me is self-worth, like how that ties into that. You know what I mean? Because broke mindset, yes, of course, you think of broke, we think of finances and money, but it also reminds me of self-worth, like how broke or broken is your mindset. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what's the self-worth that you are putting into what you do and who you are, or the lack of, that's causing you to actually be broke financially, you know? So I think that's something that can come into play. So I know, of course, you have your own experiences and you explain that, But what was that, maybe that wellness aspect, maybe that came into play with that broke mindset maybe you had in the past where you still had money at times, but, you know, we're still broke?
Well, I think for me, it kind of goes back to what you mentioned earlier in the episode where, you know, I, you know, didn't have for so long. In my first marriage, we got married at 18 and we were military family and money was always tight. So fast forward, now I have my degrees and I'm working in corporate America and I'm making this amazing money. So not like I deserve to treat myself to these nice things. And a lot of it might have been to compensate for things I was dealing with in that marriage at the time. Mm. So that kind of helped me feel better as a person, as a mom, these material things, these experiences. Oh, yeah. Not really thinking about the damage I was doing to my financial future, not only for myself, but for my children, right? That's really the name of the game at this point. We're parents first. And what are we doing to make a better future for our children? So I think that was my issue at the time. And once I realized that I had to do better for them, do better for myself, and understood what was really important for me as a mom and as a person, that's when things started to click and, you know, turn around for me. So
That self-love, that self-worth definitely ties into, you know, how we view our finances and how we spend. And I think many of us have that kind of experience, like you're just saying, when I didn't have a lot, now I have some, and right. I'm lacking in this area, whether it's a relationship or maybe you're just unhappy and you're, you know, going on that Amazon cart and just adding stuff in there. You're going online, you're shopping, not really getting down to what is it really that I'm missing, or what is this filling up in me that I am lacking? So I think it definitely all goes hand in hand for sure.
And then like during that 2.5 year journey of working on my credit, I also was working on myself as a mom and as a person. So then when I met my current husband, I was in a better place emotionally too, right? I was open to love and as you mentioned, the self-love, I had kind of found that again. And so everything kind of came together, from my financial and from my finances to the emotional part to the self-love part. So all really tie in together, but you don't even realize it, you know, at the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a certain level of alignment that comes into play. You know, it's a certain level of alignment that would you have like self-worth and self-love? And I'm big on this stuff and like affirmations and manifestations. Mm-hmm. So when you are spiritually aligned and emotionally aligned, things just start opening up for you and then you start seeing things clearer. And when you act and come from that place, that's when I think you can look at your finances. You can look at so many different things a bit differently. And how is this serving me? Right. How is me, you know, constantly spending my paycheck or money I don't really have or money I do have on certain things? How is it really fulfilling me? You know, but when you come from a place of understanding of your own self-worth and you're operating from self-love and you're aligned, you can see a bit more clearly how maybe it's not benefiting you, you know, and then you can address it in that way. You know what? Maybe I'm lacking in this. Let me work on that instead of buying this thing that is temporary. So it's all aligned, absolutely all aligned for sure. Yeah. So what do you do to take care of yourself now? Because you're super busy, you're an entrepreneur, you got all these platforms, clients, you're a mom, of course, you're a wife. How do you take care of yourself as you're supporting other Black women and helping them with their finances?
Well, pre-COVID, traveling was a big thing that my friend and I would do. We'd go to Aruba, the Bahamas. I love to travel. I love countries and have those experiences and having that time away to just disconnect. So pre-COVID, that was one thing I was big on. I'm also, now obviously we're in COVID, so that's not really a thing. Not for me. I don't feel safe.
Some people still out there, which is, you know, do you?
But I love to exercise. I go for a morning walk to kind of clear my head. Mm-hmm. I love the garden. So, we have our home. So we have, we'll plant flowers and things like that. I love the garden to kind of decompress. I love to self-care. So I'll do the facials on the weekends and spend time to just do what I like, whether it's, put on the face mask, have some wine, play some music to kind of relax and chill and just disconnect. My husband and I, we love to just sit and talk, right? We'll just sit and talk about our week, how we're feeling, because that's also really important, right? Making sure to keep the relationship intact and keeping yourself aligned. So that's also part of my self-care, you know? Mm. And so just taking time for me, ultimately. I think that by having my kids so young and going through so much in life that you're so busy about busy with serving everyone else but yourself. Mm-hmm. So I've now made sure I make myself a priority, doing the things that I like to do. Even something as simple as going out to get that ice cream or gelato that I like.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't have to do that, you know? Yeah. It doesn't have to be a lot of money to, you know, treat yourself to something nice. So that's basically what I like to do. Taking time for me, making me a priority. It's really important. In order to serve others, I have to be the best version of me.
Yeah,
self-care has to be a priority.
Absolutely. I'm a huge advocate for that. You cannot pour from an empty cup. Take care of yourself, because especially when you are in so many different spaces, right? When you are mom, wife, you know, entrepreneur, all these things, helping other people, you cannot give your best if you're lacking. You cannot. So I think anyone doing anything, whether it's in a business, entrepreneur, social media, whatever you're doing, working, it really is critical to, you know, have that wellness and self-care aspect of it. And something I actually did want to ask you, I forgot to ask you earlier, was about community for you. Who do you have in your world that supports you as you do what you do? Because I think, you know, as you're talking about self-care and wellness, you know, community is super critical and important, which is why I created this podcast, because I think community among us Black women is critical. So who's in your world to help you as you kind of, you know, increase your presence in the financial space?
I am blessed to have an amazing circle of people. I'm not even sure where to start. So first I have family, of course, you know, my husband, my children, my parents, my sisters, they all rally behind me with anything that I have going on. So having their support has been instrumental. My husband calls himself my manager. And we are always brainstorming about how to take this empire. We have a few things that we are working on all at the same time. And we're trying to figure out how to build this empire. So always brainstorming and talking about things and just trying to find strategies. So we're always talking about that. So he's definitely my biggest cheerleader. And I couldn't do this without him, honestly.
Yeah, beautiful.
And so I have great friends who, even if you don't talk about business, they're just there to kind of help me through the personal stuff, right? I have teenage children. We all know to come to these daggone kids that go through things.
Another episode.
I do a whole month of episodes on that. you know, I have my girlfriends behind me who are just there for me on a personal level. And then the next thing I have is I started an entrepreneurial mastermind a year ago.
Okay.
Because I found that as an entrepreneur, if you don't have many people in your immediate circle, it's kind of hard because you're learning something from scratch and you're doing things from scratch and you're kind of learning as you go. And I found that I was talking to different people separately about different things. And I said, how about we just get together and collectively help each other, right? Because if we're in these silos spinning our wheels, it's going to take us that much longer to get ahead. Versus us coming together and kind of sharing experiences and sharing ideas and just kind of helping to shorten that learning curve, we could all just get to our goals that much faster. So it's about 5 months. We meet once a month. We had our monthly meeting yesterday, actually. We meet once a month to kind of talk about what we've done for the last 30 days. And then did we meet our goals? Did we not meet our goals? Are we struggling? Right? Because it's a journey, right? So there are times going to fall into this funk and you just can't quite get out of it. So we kind of help each other come out of that, motivate each other, and ultimately keep each other accountable. So at the end of each meeting, we talk about what are your goals for the next 30 days. So I actually keep track of everyone's goals. And then at the next meeting, we'll circle back to see what did you do? What didn't you do? What are you struggling with? And it's been phenomenal. It's been actually almost that we've been doing this. And it's like a sisterhood and it keeps us motivated. Like I know for myself, I was in a bit of a funk back in February and March. Mm-hmm. With things going on here at home, and I wasn't really giving my all to my business. And these ladies literally just rallied around me to kind of get me out of that. And I've been great since. But without that support, I'm not saying I wouldn't still be doing what I'm doing now, but I don't know how fast I would have gotten out of that funk, right? So so that's really, you know, and then my
social I love that, right?
I have to shout out my social media followers. I have some women that I've met in the last year from Instagram, and we have this sisterhood, and we support each other. We will go on Instagram live. We all make sure we show up to support each other, to get other people in on the live. And so I've just have this amazing community of people behind me, between the social media followers, who really are my sisters now too, a lot of them, and then my personal family and friends. And so, yeah, I have a great circle. I have to admit, it's definitely been a great blessing.
That's beautiful. And it speaks to, I think, many of us, no matter what space we're in, having, of course, you know, loved ones and your support system in that way, but also people in your field, people who are, you know, essentially doing similar things to what you're doing. So you can bounce ideas off of, or like you said, to kind of relate, and everything is so important. And as I was actually going through my meditation teacher training, I connected with several women, and we still meet. We try to meet monthly, just like you're doing, and just to hold each other accountable. And we meditate together, and we do all these things because it's so important. And sometimes it's difficult in your own, what I want to say, like maybe in your own space, like maybe in your community, you know, where you live at, or your friends, to have people who are in finance or are meditators, are on like a spiritual journey, or, you know, business mind frame, to find that in your own like little circle. So now you do have to reach out, you know, like you said, through your social media platform, you're able to connect with so many. Sometimes you do have to reach out a little bit further so you can create that circle that you're looking for and that you need, you know, as you kind of progress in life and in your career. That's awesome.
Absolutely. And one thing, you know, to talk about this in a little more detail, if you aren't invited to the table, create your own table.
Yes, listen. And that's say it again. Bella, say it again, please. I love that.
If you are not invited to the table, create your own table. That's basically what I did with this mastermind. I heard of other people who are in masterminds, and I said, well, how do I find a mastermind I can join? And I had a hard time, and I said, well, you know what? I'm going to my own.
Listen.
I had some women who I knew I was talking to on a regular basis and who I thought would be interested. Now, everyone who I reached out to didn't join, because we all have so many things going on as moms and wives and entrepreneurs, and I get that. And so, but the women who did show up, it's five of us, and it's been a great experience. So I encourage anyone listening to this, you don't have to wait for anyone else to invite you. You can start your own thing. If it's just you and one other person, so be it. That's how things
X. I love it. I love it. You have to. You have to. And then it brought to mind how sometimes we have these ideas that just live in our heads. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And how, you know, you're like, all right, maybe let me join this thing that's already going on, because it might be a little bit easier. But then, like you said, they're not opening that door for you, allowing you to have a seat at that table. But man, you got to create that yourself. You got to figure out what it is you need to do, and just be vulnerable, be daring, be audacious, and do that. And I'm a firm believer in, when you crack a door open, it's going to bust wide open. Just crack it just a little bit. See, just take a peek. You know what I mean? And step your foot through and let that thing open, because it will start flowing to you the moment you just take a peek, the moment you crack that door. So, I love that. Love that. Mm-hmm. All these gems. Amazing. So my last question for you, Bella, is how do you decode your Blackness, or define yourself as a Black woman in the financial space, in your entrepreneurship?
Oh, man. Wow. So one thing I'll have to say, as working, I've worked in finance for almost 16 years now. I'm a finance manager right now for a telecommunications company. And I'm usually the only person of color in the meeting, and many times the only woman as well. So I have found that I've had to just believe in myself and know that I belong here. Because when you don't see many of us in certain spaces, you start to question yourself and your ability. And when I came to this particular role, like, I'm working with the CEO, the CFO, and other C-level executives. And when I first got there, I kind of questioned, well, why did they hire me? I don't know if I belong here. And then I started to realize I absolutely do belong here, because I've worked so hard to get here. I have my degrees. I have my bachelor's, my master's, and years of experience. And they brought me on here to bring my, you know, expertise to the table. And so it's just understanding your worth, knowing that you belong there, believing in yourself, even if no one else does. You have to own it and just move in your purpose. And for me, that's been a struggle throughout my entire career, actually, because I've always been or usually the only woman or only person of color. And I've struggled with that throughout my career in finance. When I do see others like me, it's like, hey, I see you.
Yes, get a little nod, like, hey.
Right. So it's just understanding that I belong, I deserve, I'm worthy, and I'm here for a reason. And, and sometimes you might be more qualified than your counterparts that are there at the table with
facts.
You.
Mm-hmm. Right? Michelle Obama stated, so you're talking about imposter syndrome, and of course I did an episode on that, but Michelle Obama, she says something in her, I think it was Becoming, it was on Netflix, or maybe said I was YouTubing, I don't remember, but she said something I thought was so profound, how, you know, she suffered or dealt with imposter syndrome and was at all these tables thinking like, they don't, you know, I don't belong here. You know, they're better than me. They're going to find me out, just to find out that, oh no, you really don't belong here. I belong here. You know what I mean? You get into those spaces and you're like, hold up. Like, you are not qualified. You legit not qualified to be in this space. And that starts helping you decrease those feelings of imposter syndrome and, you know, realizing I need to be here. I have to be here. I deserve, you know, to be here in this space. So yes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then also to take that one step further, which is why I instill this in my own daughter. So I do have a daughter. And I want her to understand that she is amazing. She is worthy. She belongs wherever she decides she wants to be. Because I think that we're in a time where we can empower our daughters because we see more of us in citizens of power. We see more of us in mainstream things. Whereas we growing up, I grew up in the 80s, telling my age. We didn't really have a lot of that, right? Yeah. Being empowered as a Black woman wasn't really a thing, right? Mm-hmm. So now besides worrying about myself and decoding my own Blackness, I want to instill that in my daughter as well, having that self-esteem and that self-worth and knowing that you are amazing. You are better than most when you walk into a room, and just own it.
Yes. And even if you don't, I'm a big believer in fake it till you make it. Like, you know, like at least fake the feeling of I belong here until you start realizing slowly and slowly, you know what I do? Because sometimes it takes a lot. It takes a lot. It takes a lot to walk into that door and be confident. So if you can just, you know, make your mind up to, all right, I'm just going to walk in here. I'm just going to take this step. You know, it's super critical. And like you said, teaching our daughters, I have a teenager as well. I have a little 6-year-old daughter, you know, just doing your best to teach them, you know what? Lead by example for you yourself as mom, but, you know, teach them that they belong in these spaces and, you know, to own it. Absolutely. Absolutely love that.
From early age, because you don't want them to, they're in their 30s to realize their worth and their power. I want you to know from now, so you live through your entire life with that power and energy behind you.
And something I'll say too, even like, you know, because I know for me personally, like, and maybe other people listening as well, like my self-worth and all those things didn't really happen until I was a little bit older, to like after I had like my daughter, who's my oldest child, she's 15. And there was a certain level of guilt that I felt with trying to, you know, teach her to stand on her own and self-worth and all these things while I was lacking it or while I was trying to discover it. So I think that's another element that can come into play. And, you know, as moms, just, you know, it's okay. It's okay. Let go of the guilt. As you're learning your own self-worth and self-love, you can still teach your daughters. You know what I mean? And if that's what's motivating you to increase your self-love and self-worth because you have a daughter, then use that, because you'll just do it together and it'll be equally as amazing. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. You
know? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I want to thank you so much. This is a fantastic conversation, and all the gems you dropped and all your stories and being vulnerable. And I really, really, truly appreciate it. So can you tell us your handles, where people can reach out to you? Instagram, sure, YouTube.
Absolutely. So I'm on Instagram. Instagram handle is at Bella's Credit Corner. I have a website, bellascreditcorner.com. I'm on YouTube. Just Google or put in the search bar, Bella's Credit Corner. Same thing on Facebook. And my podcast, which is on Spotify, Google, Apple Music, Stitcher, and many other platforms. It's How to Stop Being Broke in 2020.
Yes.
And yeah, that's where you can absolutely find me. And Amanda, I want to thank you so much for just inviting me to be a guest on this amazing podcast.
Thank
I've been doing the podcast. I love what you're doing. I love the message. And so I'm truly a fan.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad you're here. And like, I've been wanting to get you on for a while. So I'm glad we, you know, got it all coordinated and put together, because everything you're doing is super amazing and you're educating me. And I love following you and receiving all the gems. So everyone, seriously, make sure you follow her, because she is on point and knows her stuff. Thank you so much, Bella. I appreciate you.
You are welcome. Take care.
Subscribe to the podcast and download episodes. To continue to foster community and connection, email me at decodingblackness@gmail.com with questions, comments, or if you're interested in being a guest on the show. Don't forget to follow the Instagram page at Decoding Blackness. Peace.